I'd like to invite you to open your Bibles to the passage there in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 as we look at this topic of being fools for Christ this morning. You can tell how desperately and doggedly any individual pursues a goal by taking note of the extremes to which they're willing to go to achieve that goal. Olympic gold medalists are willing to push their bodies to the limit, to adhere to a strict diet for a lengthy period of time in order to develop the physical endurance that's required to be a medalist. Those who seek higher education, I've observed, are willing to sacrifice financially, they're willing to defer gratification, they're willing to burn the midnight oil in order to get that sheepskin at the end of the long toil. We've got a group of folks who are regularly involved in a class right here at Sunset, Financial Peace, and they learn to discipline themselves in such a way that they stay laser focused on the goal of getting out of debt and being able to celebrate that rare status in our country today of being able to say, I am debt free. I will use my funds now to the glory of God. For the Apostle Paul, his ultimate goal was not education. He had already received that at the feet of Gamaliel. His goal was not developing a great reputation among his fellow man. He already had a sterling reputation among the Jews. And he wasn't after money. All you had to do is look at his lifestyle to see that. No, his supreme goal, the one thing that he held above everything else, was he wanted to be like Jesus Christ. He was willing to sacrifice everything he had for that one goal of being like Christ. He writes here in 1 Corinthians 4 that he's even willing to become a fool in the eyes of men for the sake of being like Jesus. In chapter 4, there and down in verse 10, he even says it. He says, we are fools for Christ. Now, if we're honest, none of us really like to be regarded as fools. You've probably been like me and done something or said something where everybody looked at you and sort of raised an eyebrow and thought, did he really say that? Is he really that uneducated? Is he really that lacking in knowledge that he doesn't even understand what he's talking about in that area? None of us likes to be looked upon as being a foolish individual. And maybe you have done some things in your past that you are reminded of. I know at family reunions and all, we would regularly be telling stories, and I would just cringe when my dad would start telling some story about some stunt I pulled, and I'd say, oh, don't tell that story again. You know, none of us likes to be seen as someone who is foolish. Paul said that there are aspects of the Christian life in which he was willing to live out in such a way that those in the world would see what he was doing and observe his behavior and would just shake their heads and say, what a fool he must be. I don't think things have changed one bit. And today, if we are to live out our faith in such a way that we act like Jesus and we think like Jesus and we speak like Jesus and we serve our fellow man like Jesus did, I think we'll have the very same title attached to us today that Paul said had been attached to him. We will be regarded as fools for Christ. One of the things that will get us labeled as a fool as quick as anything is if we make a decision to live out our life fully committed to the things that we pledge ourselves to. A life of faithfulness and commitment, keeping our word, honoring what we said we were going to do, that will set us apart from the pack in a hurry. Notice what he says in the first two verses of chapter 4. So then, men ought to regard us as servants of Christ and as those entrusted with the secret things of God. Now, it is required that those who have been given a trust must prove faithful. Faithfulness is a rare quality. Commitment, stick-to-itiveness. Paul said, I made a promise, and I intend to keep it. No matter what anyone thinks of me, I will be faithful to what God has given to me. Now, we live in an age where commitment is cheap. It's cheap in marriage. It's cheap in business. I don't have to tell you it's cheap in politics. We live in a world that says, I'll honor my commitment as long as it is convenient for me. In Edinburgh, Scotland, there is an old church near the center of town, and the cemetery, as is the case in many of the churches in the British Isles, the cemeteries surround the church building. And there in that cemetery, beside one of the graves, is a little stand, and on that column is a bronze statue of a dog. And you think, why in the world would anyone do that? Dogs cannot be buried in cemeteries in England where humans are buried. There are animal cemeteries, but here in this cemetery, there's a little column with a little bronze statue, and it's of a Skye Terrier. And that little Skye Terrier's name was Bobby. And on the plaque, it explains why that dog received such an honor. It happened back in 1858. The owner of that little terrier, it was just a pup at the time, died. And he was carried out of the house to the church and eventually was buried. And the dog followed all the way and saw where his master was buried. And for the next 14 years, that dog sat there on that grave every single day. It became such an amazing thing to the people there in Edinburgh that they brought food and would feed the dog. And that dog stayed there daily at his master's grave until the dog himself died. You know, it's sad when we live in a world where dogs know more about faithfulness than humans do. The world says, you are a fool to stay with him or to stay with her. You deserve to be happy. The world says, look how much that deal's going to cost you. You better find a way to find a loophole to get out of that. That's going to cost you a fortune. Even though you've given your word, even though you have made a commitment, even though you've signed your name, the only question that seems to be asked by many is, can I break my commitment without being sued? Or can I break my commitment without going to jail? The Christian, however, lives at a higher level of ethics. Paul says you're going to be regarded as a fool if you adhere to that level of ethical behavior. Paul says, I'll be faithful. I'll be committed, even if I'm regarded as a fool for doing so. A second area that he talks about in which Christians are going to be set apart from the world and in which they're going to appear very foolish to many is that they will live their life with a spirit of humility. Down in verse 6, he says, now, brothers, I have applied these things to myself and Apollos for your benefit, so that you may learn from us the meaning of the saying, do not go beyond what is written. Then you will not take pride in one man over against another. For who makes you different from anyone else? What do you have that you did not receive? And if you did receive it, why do you boast as though you did not? He says, I have already said about Apollos and myself, we're nothing. We're simply servants. We're simply tools. God is the one who makes things grow. And then he says, don't go beyond that. Don't take on bragging rights about your great gifts and your great skills and your great wealth and your great knowledge. That was one of the major issues that those Christians in Corinth faced. They thought so highly of themselves. And Paul's answer to that is, anything that you have was given to you. You don't have bragging rights. What a contrast that we see around us in this world in which we live. I don't know how many times a year Hollywood honors themselves, but it seems like every time I turn on the television that there's some program about the Tonys or the Oscars or the Emmys, and I've never seen any group anywhere that honors themselves as frequently as Hollywood does. And it's not just Hollywood. Self-promotion is a way of life. If you want to get ahead, you're taught in school, you're taught by your industry coaches how to be involved in constant self-promotion. It's a way of life in politics. You can't turn on your television again without seeing constant self-promotion, from name dropping to status symbols to wealth and to power. And the idea is, if you've got it, then flaunt it. Use whatever you have to your advancement. Merchandise it. Are you physically beautiful? Do you know you can make a fortune today if you're physically beautiful? Are you athletic? Boy, there's money in that. You can make a lot of money if you have tremendous athletic skills. Are you smart? Did you know you can make a fortune if you have a high IQ and if you can use your mind to achieve success? Are you successful in business? Promote it. Get an agent. Tell that agent, show me the money. I want self-promotion here so that I can achieve great success in the world. You know, there are people, though, that are physically beautiful, that have been gifted, have beautiful voices, have great skills athletically, that don't necessarily use that for self-promotion. There are those that use their skills in ways that honor God, and they lose all kinds of money in the process. Listen to the words of Jeremiah. They're recorded in Jeremiah chapter 9, verses 23 and 24. This is what the Lord says. Let not the wise man boast of his wisdom, or the strong man boast of his strength, or the rich man boast of his riches. But let him who boasts boast about this, that he understands and knows me, that I am the Lord who exercises kindness, justice, and righteousness on earth, for in these I delight. You know, there's something better than self-promotion. But if you choose what Jeremiah spoke of, there are going to be a lot of people who'll shake their head and they'll say, what a waste, what a fool. You could have had it all, and you threw it away. Paul asked the question here in chapter 4 in verse 7, for who makes you different from anyone else? What do you have that you did not receive? And if you did receive it, why do you boast as though you did not? God is the one who gives us every attribute, every gift that we possess. Brahms, the great composer, we know him for his lullaby, was on the street one day walking when someone recognized him and ran up to him and they put a piece of paper in his face. And they said, would you just write out one measure? I've always wanted to have a signed copy of one measure of the greatest composer that's ever lived. And he obliged and patiently took out his pen and wrote the notes on the staff and handed it back. And they said, what piece is this? And he said, well, it's a opening measure of the Blue Danube by Strauss. Humility. A person who does not always promote themselves. Any individual who is blessed with great talent or great wealth and yet who uses what they have unselfishly and humbly will be regarded as foolish by many people in this world. And then the third quality that Paul speaks of here in chapter 4 that will cause people to look upon you as foolish is a willingness to be wronged. You know, that goes against the grain. We learn early in life, perhaps the earliest thing that is learned by any child is to be able to cry out with indignation, "That's not fair." Paul urges us as Christians to go against that natural response. It's an unnatural thing to willingly allow yourself to be wronged. Can you return a blessing to a curse? Can you endure when you are mistreated at work or by someone that's close to you? Can you return words of kindness in the face of slanderous remarks that are made about you? Who would respond like that? Don't be a fool. Don't take it laying down. If someone hits you, hit them back. No, Paul says, if you are a follower of Jesus Christ, be a fool in this area. The world says fight fire with fire and don't get mad, get even. Paul wrote in 1 Thessalonians 5:15, be patient with, remember how it ends? Be patient with everyone. That's hard to do. Be patient with everyone. Make sure that nobody pays back wrong for wrong, but always try to be kind to one another. Boy, what a lofty goal. How far from the natural impulse that is. As Jesus stood before Pilate, accusations were piled up against him. False witnesses made charges against him. And there in Matthew 27, Pilate was amazed. And it says that Pilate just looked at Jesus in amazement. And he asked him, "Don't you hear the testimony that they're bringing against you?" But Jesus made no reply, not even to a single charge, to the great amazement of the governor. In John 19, Pilate's words are recorded there. Pilate responded by saying, "Don't you realize that I have the power to free you or to crucify you?" In essence, he was saying, "You fool, you stand there. And all these accusations are made and you won't even try to defend yourself. Don't you know that I can let you go or crucify you?" In his silence, Jesus was fulfilling the words of the prophecy of Isaiah 53:7. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. That's what Paul is challenging the Corinthian church to do. And I think that challenge is alive and well for us at Sunset today. Be committed. Be humble. Be willing to be wronged. Yes, people will say you're a fool if you do these things. But God will be pleased. God will be delighted with that kind of behavior. The martyred missionary Jim Elliot, who flew his plane into the jungles of the Amazon basin in the country of Ecuador, by the way, a country which we're looking at and we hope to also be able to be sharing the gospel of Christ in before too much longer. His plane was there in Ecuador, and the natives there along the Amazon basin river there killed him. And his diaries have been published. And among the things that he recorded are these words: "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." Fools for Christ. This morning, I want to be challenged, and I want to challenge you by the words of Paul to live in a way that is unnatural, but in a way that is Christ-honoring. This morning, if we can pray for you, this morning, if we can assist you as you render obedience to the gospel of Jesus Christ, we'll do that. At this time, we invite you to come while we stand and while we sing.